Intense fighting in eastern Ukraine as Russia claims it holds 97% of Luhansk.
According to Russian sources, Severodonetsk is under Russian control, but this is not quite true because the fightings are happening all the time, and every hour the situation is changing.
Plus, talks in Turkey with Russia's foreign minister to try to allow desperately needed grain to flow from Ukraine.
If Ukrainian grain remains trapped, analysts say Ankara will face growing pressure to give NATO warships access to the Black Sea through Istanbul's Bosphorus waterway.
And later in the program, a sign that a more normal life is returning to Kyiv. Today is Tuesday, June 7th, 2022. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Reddish, in for Steve Miller. Britain has announced it will provide long-range missile launchers to Ukraine. This follows a similar decision by the U.S. last week. Details from Henry Ridgewell in London.
Britain is giving Ukraine an unspecified number of M270 launchers, which can fire 12 precision-guided rockets up to 80 kilometres in under 1 minute. The decision was coordinated with Washington, which is sending similar M142 high-mobility artillery rocket systems, or HIMARS, seen here on the right.
What MLRS systems like HIMARS and the M270 will do will be to provide the Ukrainians with the range to engage some of the longer-range Russian systems, as well as a precision-guided capability, which will enable things like counter-battery fire against long-range Russian assets.
The British government said the missile systems would help Ukrainian forces protect themselves against Russia's brutal use of long-range artillery. The Kremlin's forces have made incremental advances in recent weeks in the eastern Donbass region.
The Russians do enjoy a substantial advantage in terms of the sheer number of systems they feel, so they can make up in just mass what they lack in precision.
The results are clear on the battlefield. Towns and cities left in ruins.
They hit all this territory with grads every 10 meters.
Western-supplied anti-tank missiles helped drive back Russian armored columns advancing on Kyiv. Now, the nature of the war is changing.
In this position, it isn't that effective because their tanks don't come closer than 3.5 kilometers, and this weapon can't effectively reach the target at that distance.
Meanwhile, Russian President Vladimir Putin said his armed forces would react if the West supplied long-range missiles to Ukraine.
If they are going to be supplied, we'll make certain conclusions and use our own means of destruction, of which we have enough to strike at targets that have not yet been hit.
Britain and the United States said they had received Ukrainian assurances that the long-range missiles would not be fired into Russian territory. Moscow warned of absolutely undesirable and rather unpleasant scenarios if that happened. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
I spoke with Henry Ridgewell a short time ago about how the British government perceives threats by Russia if these long-range missile launchers are delivered and used.
So far, throughout this conflict since it began in February, British officials have played down the threat from Russia. Britain has been at the forefront of supplying heavy weapons to Ukraine. And I think the feeling in London is that it does not have the kind of assets, the kind of risks located within Russian range, if you like, that might be vulnerable to any Russian retaliation in this context. Britain has also managed to far more quickly wean itself off from Russian coal imports, for example, Russian oil imports. And so it's not so exposed as other European NATO members might be in terms of Russian retaliation. What we've seen so far from Russia in response to Western nations supplying weapons is the periodic targeting of locations where Moscow believes those Western weapons are being stored or where Ukrainian soldiers are being trained to use them. So we've seen, for example, airstrikes and missile strikes close to Lviv in western Ukraine in recent months and other locations. Russia claims to have also destroyed a missile defense system supplied by Slovakia earlier in the year as well. So I think Britain is not worried sufficiently to prevent it supplying these kind of weapons. And the calculation is so far that the bigger risk would be to allow Russia to become emboldened by seizing more land in Ukraine more quickly. And therefore, it's time to act fast and supply these longer range missile systems.
How concerned are the British officials that Ukraine will use these weapon systems on targets inside Russia?
Both Britain and the United States, and those are the two countries that are supplying these long-range missiles, say they have received specific assurances from the Ukrainian government that these weapons will not be used inside Russia. Now, of course, Ukraine is only as good as its word, but it has become a close ally of NATO, of the West, of Britain and America in the past years and months. And therefore, I think the calculation, again, is that if Ukraine wants the continued support of Britain and America and NATO, which will be vital as this conflict appears to be turning into more of a long war, that support, that continued support, will be vital. And if Ukraine were to break its promise, were to target locations beyond the border inside Russia, then Britain and America would think twice about keeping on supplying these weapons. And don't forget, it's not just the launchers that are important. It's the continued supply of the ammunition to load them with that is vital for their continued use as well. And so that will be a delivery system, a part of the logistics that Britain and America will be working out now. Ukraine has in the past targeted locations within Russia, particularly oil refineries, some of those infrastructure targets. But again, Britain at the moment believes that it is safe and will take Ukraine on its word that it's not going to fire these missiles over the border.
In your report, you talked about the nature of the war changing from columns of Russian armor heading to Kyiv. So what is this new nature of the war that you're talking about as far as now fighting in the Donbas?
Russia originally hoped that it would take Kyiv quickly. And to do that, it sent heavily armored columns tens of kilometers long towards the Ukrainian capital in the hope of effectively decapitating the Ukrainian state, of taking the capital and of a quick conflict and taking the country. That didn't happen. And part of the reason is that Ukraine was well prepared, both in terms of its own armed forces, but also because the West quickly supplied it with the types of weapons that were vital for attacking those long armored convoys, things like the Javelin and Enlaw anti-tank shoulder-mounted missiles, which proved hugely effective against those columns. It meant that they weren't able to refuel and resupply. They got stuck on the roads into Kyiv and eventually had to withdraw. One analyst I recently spoke to compared this to a sort of modern-day attempt at blitzkrieg by the Russian army of quickly sending armored columns towards the capital. But he also compared the changing nature of the war now into a modern form of trench warfare. Russia has learned its lesson. These long convoys aren't working. Instead, what it's doing is pounding Ukrainian positions and indeed entire towns and cities and villages with long-range artillery, which is out of the range currently of the Ukrainian forces, annihilating everything in its path effectively, and then sending in the Russian forces once that kind of environment has been created. And that appears to be slowly working. Russia is incrementally advancing, or has been in recent weeks, in the Donbas region in eastern Ukraine. And that changing nature of the warfare is behind Britain and America's decision to send this long-range artillery, because the long-range missile systems, because that will enable them to target the Russian long-range artillery that is firing on the Ukrainian positions and allowing them to move forward slowly across those flat plains.
Germany's leader is in Lithuania today and vowing that the West will continue to arm Ukraine. What can you tell us about his visit?
Olaf Scholz, the German leader, visited Lithuania and met the leaders of the three Baltic states there, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. Germany leads the contingent of NATO forces deployed in Lithuania as a deterrent to any Russian invasion. And he was very supportive of more NATO troops going to those Baltic states as further deterrents. Indeed, he supported the idea of boosting the troop levels to a brigade level, effectively somewhere around 5,000 troops deployed at various locations in the Baltic states, given their vulnerability, it would seem now, to any Russian incursion following what's happened in Ukraine. Scholz said that this is vital as NATO approaches this key summit, which is at the end of the month in Madrid. And there, NATO is going to spell out big changes to its long-term defense posture, given the changing security environment in Europe. And we can expect several decisions about deployments in the Baltic states, in deployments elsewhere in Eastern Europe, when that summit takes place at the end of June.
Henry Ridgewell in London, thanks so much for joining us. The battle for Severodonetsk rages on in eastern Ukraine. It's one of the last cities in the region to hold out against Russia's invasion. Russia's defense minister claims they control 97% of the Luhansk region, which borders Russia. The fighting there is allowing Ukrainians elsewhere to return to their homes, or what's left of them. Anna Kostuchenko reports for us from Kyiv.
We had a nice kitchen here. The house was very nice.
This is what's left of 82-year-old Oleksandra Yahudina home after Russian shelling of her hometown of Irpin. She and her daughter, Vera Malakhina, lived in this house for more than 20 years. The daughter recalls fleeing with help from the Ukrainian military.
We asked them to take us away. The shelling was awful here. Military men helped us to cross the river by pontoon bridge.
Malakhina is 65 years old. She's been a commercial painter since a young age. 10 years ago, she had enough money saved to add on to and repair this old house. Now she and her mother are digging out whatever they can salvage.
People helped me to take out the fridge. It works. It's banged up, but I plugged it in and it works. I cook at the neighbor's house. They gave me the keys and let me take showers.
Oleksandra Yahudina found a sofa.
I asked them to help me pull out of the rubble my sofa so at least I could sit in the sun.
Now she spends most of her day here. When it rains, she hides in a small barn that survived the shelling. At night, the mother and daughter share a mattress on the floor. But Malakhina says they're better off than others. Some of their neighbors don't even have a barn for shelter. Russian artillery destroyed everything.
We have at least something left. Our neighbor Shura, her house is the first one on Oktyabrska Street. There's nothing left of her house.
Occasionally, Vera tries to get into her ruined house to search for more items. She says the most precious one is a wedding photo.
That's my deceased husband. That's me and our classmates.
Oleksandra is happy her flower pots survived.
I used to plant a lot of flowers when I lived in the village. My friends would ask me, how do you do that? I always answered, it's easy.
Recently, Malakhina received a small amount of monetary aid from the state. It's equivalent to about $65. Not enough money to begin rebuilding for now. Before the war began, Malakhina says she was unable to work and was scheduled to undergo cancer surgery. But all that's on hold for now. Anna Kostuchenko for Voice of America News, Irpin, Ukraine.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. With the fighting seemingly concentrated in eastern Ukraine, I spoke to reporter Anna Chernikova in Kyiv about Russia's claims to control nearly all of the Luhansk region.
We definitely can say that most of Luhansk region is under Russian control. Recently, Ukrainian officials were saying about 80%. It's difficult to say for the moment, what is exact situation with Severodonetsk, because according to Russian sources, Severodonetsk is under Russian control, but this is not quite true because the fightings are happening all the time and every hour the situation is changing. So on the weekend, Ukrainian forces took back half of the Severodonetsk. Yesterday, situation changed completely, and now Ukrainian forces control the industrial area, but still very heavy and intensive fightings are happening on the streets of the city. So definitely, if we consider Severodonetsk as, a zone which is for the moment under the fightings and not under particular control of one of the sides, then probably we would say that around 80% is under Russian control.
The way you're describing the fighting in Severodonetsk, it seems like one day one side has 18 blocks, and then the next day the other side has 18 blocks of the city. Is that kind of what's going on, that fighting is going on back and forth and block by block by block in the city?
Kind of, yes, because the fightings are happening in the streets. So basically, both sides are trying to concentrate a certain amount of forces to get certain, blocks. Yeah, certain block under its control and to go on. Because, this is a specific of this town of Severodonetsk. There is no other way that forces can just take over the city. It's quite big. It's industrial city. There are a lot of plants there. And, it's kind of, it's not an easy landscape as well. So this is exactly what we're hearing, that there are artillery fightings. Basically, we can call it artillery duels happening in the city. And unfortunately, what we also can see that the city is kind of burned down, and the situation with the infrastructure and with the civilian areas in particular is very similar to Mariupol. The city is almost completely destroyed, unfortunately.
There's a lot of concern around the world that Ukrainian wheat, which is still sitting in Ukraine, is not being delivered to the rest of the world, and there's the possibility of famine. What can you tell us about the status of the grain and other foodstuffs that comes out of Ukraine?
So this is one of the main problems for the moment for the whole world, and Ukraine clearly understands that this is a priority question for the moment. It goes in line with all the military questions, because it's really what Ukraine wants to solve. So what we know for the moment is that Turkey is trying to be this moderator and together with UN arrange safe corridors for the grains to be exported from the Ukrainian seaports, which are now blocked by Russian forces. In terms of Ukrainian side, I can say that Ukraine is very much interested in resolving this problem, but at the same time, Ukraine is very careful about the safe corridor, because Ukraine is afraid that Russia could use it as, for military attack on Odessa in particular. So this would be a certain humanitarian operation, definitely under UN and other international organizations.
Those talks in Turkey with Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov will be held Wednesday. From Istanbul, our Dorian Jones reports.
Not long ago, ships carrying Ukrainian grain to global markets were a regular sight sailing through Istanbul's Bosphorus waterway. But not anymore. With Russia's naval blockade of Ukraine, the world's fifth largest grain supplier, prices are hitting record levels, threatening turmoil. Yoruk Ushuk is a geopolitical analyst in Istanbul with the Washington-based Middle East Institute.
Lebanon's 2020 wheat import, 75% from Ukraine. And you know, wheat is something like this, like if you want to go buy wheat right now, you will pay lots of money and maybe you won't find to buy it. So like in a country like Lebanon, where there is already financial crisis, you'll have major crisis.
The threat of a global food crisis is prompting some NATO countries to intervene. Discussions between Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov and Turkish officials are due to focus in part on creating a Black Sea corridor to allow Ukrainian grain to access world markets. Ankara says such a deal averts the risk of confrontation between NATO and Russia, given Russia's strong naval presence in the Black Sea. But there is skepticism over Russia's commitment to easing the grain crisis, with analysts saying Moscow could be using it as leverage. If Ukrainian grain remains trapped, analysts say Ankara will face growing pressure to give NATO warships access to the Black Sea through Istanbul's Bosphorus waterway, which Turkey administers under the International Montreux Convention. Serhat Kuvenç is a professor of international relations at Kadarhas University in Istanbul.
Technically and legally, the straits are close to the warships of the two belligerents, Ukraine and Russia. The others, Turkey has asked them kindly not to send any warships. So at one point, Turkey will be presented with a demand, either by NATO or by a NATO member, to send warships into the door. So, I mean, Turkey's options are really narrowing in the context of Russian-Ukrainian war.
But analysts say Turkey is determined to prevent new protagonists from entering the Black Sea and expanding the war. Mustafa Aydın is president of the International Relations Council of Turkey, a research organization in Istanbul.
It also doesn't want to see escalation of the insecurity situation by bringing in new forces like the NATO forces to balance the Russian, because the calculation is that that would inevitably create more dangerous situation for own Turkish security and also for the regional security.
Ankara is well aware of how much Moscow wants to keep the Bosphorus close to NATO ships, giving Turkey powerful leverage over Russia. Dorian Jones of VOA News, Istanbul.
Russia's ambassador to the UN walked out of a Security Council meeting after rejecting accusations that Russian troops committed sexual crimes during its invasion of Ukraine. The AP's Tim McGuire has more.
Pramila Patton, the UN Special Envoy for Sexual Violence and Conflict, tells the United Nations Security Council,
reports of 124 alleged acts of conflict-related sexual violence occurring against women, girls, men and boys.
Russia's ambassador to the UN, Vasily Nebenzia, through an interpreter, calls the allegations lies.
Accusations of Russian service personnel committing crimes of a sexual nature since the very beginning of our special military operation in Ukraine has become a favorite tactic of the Kiev regime and our Western colleagues.
Patton says when she visited the reception centers and border crossings, she also received anecdotal accounts of human trafficking attempts aimed at Ukrainian women and children refugees. I'm Tim McGuire.
Despite the intense fighting in eastern Ukraine, life is getting back to some sort of normal in the capital of Kyiv, most notably with the reopening of a theater. Here's the AP's Charles de Ledesma.
The Podil is welcoming back an audience for the first time since the Russian invasion, selling out its first three plays. The performers had wondered if spectators would come during wartime. Actor Kostya Tomliak says we're like cockroaches. We had a very bad experience of survival without money for 2 years during the coronavirus restrictions, and then it was necessary to learn how to live during the conflict. Referring to the Russian invasion, he says, you continue living, although you don't forget. After closing shortly after the invasion in February, Kyiv cinemas and National Opera also reopened their doors at the end of May. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
That's going to do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Reddish.
This is the voice of America, Washington, ZIPTC.